go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Deep Space High Podcast, where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So, Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. You know how it is. Another day at work. I just got home not too long ago. Ate some tacos. Only if it was Tuesday. Oh, but this will be released on Tuesday. So, hashtag tacos and track. I'm going to watch Star Trek after this. I think we still have some more tacos left downstairs.
Tacos and Trek. We haven't used that since, like, well, Picard. We did Picard.
Yeah. We need to get that back up. Oh, we got an Instagram now too. So yep. We could be posting them whenever anytime we eat tacos and watch some Star Trek. Hashtag tacos and Trek. Let's see if we can get that back going.
Yeah, I kinda had some tacos. I had like shredded chicken thrown into a tortilla with some cheese and salsa on it. So that's kind of a taco.
That is a taco.
Don't know if everyone will agree with that, but yeah.
It was just
leftover chicken from, I don't know, we baked it for something. I don't even know what we made, but we had leftover, so I just shredded it, threw it in a tortilla.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. You actually eat leftovers.
Try to. That's what happens when you grow up and become an adult.
Yeah, that's the truth.
So.
That's the truth. All right. Well, what's going on with you, though, brother?
Not much. Was working, just not doing much over the weekend.
Yeah, nice. Did you enjoy some football?
Yeah, I watched some football.
You watched the Longhorns game?
Of course I watched the Longhorns game.
Oh, my God. What a game. They had, like, two block punts, down by 15, get the onside kick to get a game-winning touchdown, and with, like, 3 minutes to go in the fourth. What a game.
Yeah, it was a good game.
Well, just in case those of you who listen to our Deep Space High podcast, we also have a separate podcast in which we talk about sports. If you want to talk or hear more about us when we... God damn it, that was... You see where I was going with that, right?
You were going to say, if you want to catch us talking sports... Go ahead and check out the Rolling Fade. It's Chris and I, along with our other brother, and we sit down once a week and shoot the shit on sports. We didn't have a cold open plan, so I guess we plugged our other podcast.
why not? Free advertising.
I guess. So if any sports fans are out there, you can go ahead and check that out. We drop, I think it's Wednesdays. We try to get those episodes out. So, yeah, check that out.
All right, I guess what do we got in store for this week's episode? I think that's enough for our other podcast.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
For this episode of Deep Space High, we are going over Altered Carbon Season 1. Sorry, Season 2. And we're discussing.
We're pretty tired. If you haven't, if you couldn't tell,
a little bit. And we're going over the first three episodes of season two. I copied and pasted notes over, but I left all of the season one information in the details, which it makes no sense. But whatever.
You were just lazy. Didn't feel like doing it.
Is what it is. I thought I did. Well, I changed the episode numbers to 1 through 3, like we are covering, but I didn't change season two. I didn't change it to season two. It still said season one episodes 1 through 3, and I was like, that's not right.
You're an accountant, isn't that your job to be able to notice that the little details in the numbers
Not on the weekends. Not when I'm off the clock. When I'm off the clock, it's drinking, doing podcasts, playing video games, reading books. Yeah, about right for an accountant. Yeah. As soon as I clock out, you know, my use of numbers is gone. So to find out this, the first scene we get is a scene with Poe. And that's surprising, given the events of what happened with him in the first season. He got snapped out of existence. Yeah, and next thing you know, he got unsnapped, and he's sitting there at a bar, which they call Magna Prime, something like that. And he's talking to this lady. Who do you recognize her by chance?
Yeah, she's from the Defender series, or no? She's from Luke Cage. She's the cop. And Defender. I'm trying to remember her name.
Misty something. I don't know the actress's name, but she plays. Misty something. The cop who ends up losing her arm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I was curious if you were going to pick that up.
Kind of weird parallel, huh?
Yeah.
She lost her arm, and then she got a upgraded cybernetic one, and so did the cop in what's her name?
The
lieutenant.
Ortega, yeah.
Yeah, Ortega. Same thing happened to her, too.
Well, it was crazy, because you find out the girl who plays in the Defenders that Poe's talking to, she's in a synth sleeve. And in these first three episodes, we'll stick to this scene for the most part, but you learn a lot more about synth sleeves in these first three episodes. But just speaking on this scene, at least in this particular case, you find out that the nerve endings are inferior to organic sleeves, you know, because her shit goes haywire during them, or she feels, you know, unnecessary pain during this conversation with Poe. And she got linked up like she's cyborg.
Yeah, which was interesting, because I actually think that they kind of, I don't want to say they got it from Star Trek, but Star Trek did that first. They had something similar in Deep Space Nine, to where they would be able to have I don't know what it would be an accurate description, but they have something in their head to where they can like plug it into the wall and they could connect to the networks across, you know, the galaxy or across the quadrant, I guess, be able to access banking information, basically like hooking up to the web. And I thought that was an interesting parallel, because that's exactly what this is too, that she's got. Because hack information and access. It's a similar concept for with the eyepieces as well.
Yeah, the eyepieces are called Onis, O-N-I. And I feel like that's kind of what it is. It's like an extension of, you know, her Oni piece that she has for making phone calls. But this, instead, it's, you know, like a smartphone in her brain.
Yeah, that would be...
It was weird.
That'd be weird to have. Could you...
Go ahead.
Could you imagine having almost, I guess it would be like for maybe like with contact lenses that do that, kind of like the Google glasses or whatever, where you look.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit in previous episodes, how cool it would be to have those type of contact lenses, and, you know, kind of have like an Iron Man type HUD situation, but with just a contact lens. That'd be dope.
That'd be hard to make. Elon Musk, get to work on it. I'm sure he already is.
That's why it's science fiction. I mean, sure, someday, but that's probably a couple, you know, maybe 100 years down the road. Maybe Google can't even get the Google glasses right.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The shit that Elon Musk is coming up with, the innovations that him and his companies are doing, he's leading the new... he's leading the next industrial revolution. I mean, he'll be our generation's scientific
discovery age or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it was funny. Slight tangent.
Yeah, we're actually about to that point. We're about every 100 years we've had a new revolution around the 20s. We had it in the 1920s. We had it in the 1870s technically. So never mind. Sorry, history major.
We're not on that. But I was going to slight tangent with, because we were talking about Google glasses. I was at Best Buy the other day, and Bose has a pair of sunglasses that actually have speakers in them.
Huh. That's interesting.
So I guess you could play, instead of having an earpiece in, I think it's kind of an external, but it's right behind your ear. So that way you could listen to music while wearing sunglasses and whatnot. So I didn't look at the price, but I was like, I stopped in my tracks for a minute and looked at it and I picked them up and I was like, is this real? Am I really seeing this? And I was like, oh, okay. Interesting.
You know, it doesn't surprise me because I have like a sleep mask that I wear when I sleep. That's got Bluetooth headphones built into the mask. So you can listen to music or listen to stuff while you're sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen stuff like that, pillows and masks, but this was the first time where I've seen glasses. They had a little thicker of a frame that go around the ear, but it had a speaker, so that was cool.
That is cool.
But back to the episodes. So this first scene was really weird. It was really weird to come out with a new season, but I like it because we find out her name is Trep, this bounty hunter girl, and she's looking for Kovacs because she was hired to find him and recruit him for another meth to kind of, you know, give him a job offer. So we find out Kovacs is actually, he's at this bar and he's supposed to meet up with, I guess, another one of his partners who owes him money. And then, you know, all hell breaks loose because his partner walks in, has a case, says, whoever is Kovacs, here's your money, closes the case. And then a fight ensues because everyone's like, I'm Kovacs. And then the real Kovacs was actually the singer singing the whole time, walks out and meets the guy. And then that guy ends up getting his,
he pulls the slip because he shows the, was it untrackable credits or what do they call it?
Yeah, something like that. Kovacs was owed a buttload of credits and I think they were untraceable or kind of like
Bitcoin.
Yeah, something like that.
So, I mean, whatever it was, I mean, it was valuable enough for everybody to pull up Spartacus and say, I'm Kovacs, and go after it, you know. And good for Kovacs to notice that. I would have been disappointed if he didn't notice it.
Right. You would have to be. You would have to be. But that leads, this whole first episode's interesting, because then you finally see, is it the Trep lady? I think, yeah. Because Kovacs, because that's when, you know, they're outside, and then Kovacs kills his partner, and then something like that. And then he has the conversation with Trep, the girl who plays Misty in Luke Cage. And then he turns down the job and tries to walk away, and this broad shoots him right in the back.
Yeah.
And then takes a big move. I know, and then takes his stack, cast him off into VR so he could talk with this, Horace Axley. So, and then, you know, you find out this Axley guy wants to hire him. I was like, oh, okay, this seems like a little bit of a repeat of episode or season one.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that too. But I was also curious on how long of a jump it was from season one or the end of season one to season two. So maybe it's something that happens regularly for him.
Maybe not. We get that answer sometime either at the end of this episode or sometime in episode two that it's, we're going to say roughly
100 years.
No, it was only 30 or 35 years.
I thought it was longer. Maybe I was stoned.
Maybe. No, because, you know, this episode plays out and actually really wants Kovacs to be his bodyguard. So I guess it's a little different than episode or season one, because Axley is like fearing for his life. He's like, someone's trying to kill me. And then, of course, he brings up Falconer. I'll just call her Falconer because I can say that. Brings her up because, you know, Kovacs has been on this quest ever since the end of season one, trying to find her, especially since Ray said that she is backed up somewhere. And So he's been on the hunt, and he brings her up, and then that kind of sells Kovacs in to join his team and be a bodyguard.
Yeah, but I mean, it sucks for him because as soon as he comes back and gets, what's it called when they get re-sleeved? Is there a name for the process?
There probably is, but I just call it being sleeved or maybe transitioned.
Reanimated?
I don't think it's reanimated. I don't think they have. If they do, I haven't picked up on it yet, what the term would be for being re-sleeved. I just call it re-sleeved.
Yeah. All right, well, let's see. Keep an eye out for the rest of the season, see if they bring it up again.
Yeah.
But, as soon as he re-sleeves, he finds out that everybody there is dead.
Oh, yeah, he wakes up to a bloodbath.
Yeah. Yeah, like the... I think probably to the same scale of what he did to when he got out of the VR, torture.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In season one, whenever all that shit went down.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was bad. There was blood everywhere. I mean, not quite as bad because he didn't, you know, no one was decapitated, but it was still, there was a lot of blood everywhere, even though everyone seemed like they were in one piece.
Yeah, but I mean, there were still dead bodies everywhere, like entire rooms, pretty much the entire building just full of dead bodies. They slaughtered everyone, and I don't know if they RD'd them. If you, they explained that in the later episodes that they did RD them. They killed everybody there. So
yeah, because whoever did it was able to destroy his backups and then end up destroying his stack. And a lot of people, or the rumor is, you know, no one will come out and publicly say he's real death because they don't want mess to be scared that he could actually die now. But so like mm-hmm. The governor's hesitant to say that, but there's rumors flying around that, yeah, he's RD'd, which he is.
Yep. And then we also find out about that's when the colonel comes in, because the colonel,
colonel doesn't show up till later.
Oh, it was towards the end of the episode. Because remember, he went to the crime scene with all the police, and then...
No, that was episode two.
Was that?
Yes.
I didn't think I skipped ahead that much.
Yep, you didn't. Because, you know, because the first thing that happens is...
Oh, that's at the beginning of... Okay, that's probably why. I watched them back to back, so I just probably got them.
Yeah, probably. So
it's the first scene of episode two, and it's towards the... I thought it was towards the end of episode one.
Yeah, which we'll get there in a minute.
But it doesn't matter. You know, we're not doing an episode-by-episode breakdown. So, I mean, it doesn't really matter.
No, but I think I wanted to bring up this information because you were asking about it. Because after, you know, he kind of sees the bloodbath, he realizes, hey, I'm going to be blamed for this. So he gets the heck out of Dodge, pulls up Poe, and they go... I thought it was this episode where he runs into the Yakuza. Yeah, he does. So he pulls up Poe, and then they're looking for a place to hide. They end up actually going to the hotel where he was arrested initially in the first episode of season one.
Oh, yeah. And then
some guys from the Yakuza are there, I think, making some drugs, like using it as quote-unquote meth lab. Mm-hmm. But it's not like a meth. It's not really meth. It's some eye-dropping drug or whatever. And then he gets into a fight, and he recites all this Yakuza stuff. So you got the feeling that Kovacs at some point did some work with the Yakuza.
Well, I mean, he claimed to be the owner of the property.
Well, yeah, not only that, he claimed to be the head of the Yakuza, and I didn't catch the guy's name. But that's when the leader of this little meth lad group was like, well, there's one problem with it. If you were really this guy, you would recognize your great grandson.
Yeah. Which kind of worked because, you know, they air quote kicked his ass and then took him to the head of the Yakuza, who he claimed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which we turned to find out, like I said, I didn't grab his name and I should have, shame on me, but, you know, then you find out Kovacs and him are, you know, work together and they're like old friends.
Yeah. I mean, he was scared shitless of him. I mean, it was almost like a John Wick kind of scenario. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, even just the mention of his name and they quiver in their boots.
Oh, yeah. And
what
you
was
see that?
What was
lot.
His name? Boba Yaga? Yeah, we'll call him Boba Yaga. The boogeyman. Something like
that. Yeah, something like that.
I'm butchering from John Wick. My Russian's not. Yeah, my Russian's Boba Yaga. Very good. Yeah, Boba Yaga.
Something like that, yeah. But, you know, after this, and he gets, I mean, he talks with the guy, the leader of the Yakuza. He kind of lets him use the hotel space as his hideout. And then this is where you find out, hey, we're back where we started. Because Poe brings up the question, when was the last time we were here? 5 years? And Kovacs says, try 30. So
yeah, see, that's what kind of got me thinking. It was more like the end of season one and the start of season two was more in hundreds of years because, you know, that building was where they started when they were looking, not, well, maybe, was it when they were looking or when it was just the last time they were there?
No, the last time he
because
was
that
there.
Because that was when he was.
The last time they're saying he was there to use it as a hideout was like 300 years prior when he got arrested by the Protectorate. But they were on Harlem's World, which is Kovacs' home planet. And he says, Kovacs says, we're back to the same place where we started, which was 30 years ago. So you got to assume it's roughly 30 years between season one and the start of season two.
Yeah, assuming that's probably the first place they went to.
Yeah. Given that's home planet where Calquest Falconer died and all this fun stuff.
So. Right. See, and you also find out the show because I mean I learned more just from having these conversations that I miss from just watching it.
Yeah, and then you also learn there was a scene, I think it was with the governors, or yeah, it had to be with the governor who is I think it's Danica Harlem, who succeeded her father as the new governor. And she's having a conversation with maybe the colonel briefly. I don't remember who off the top of my head, but something about the elders who I guess might have been on the planet before or might have something to do with the history of the planet. And then you find out that the planet is guarded by weaponized satellites that are unable to be destroyed. So
how they'd be unable to be destroyed.
I don't know. I think they were saying the elders were the ones who built the satellites. But apparently the planet's protected. So
yes.
Now what has to happen for the satellites to be triggered? Because, you know, when the colony ship arrived, they would obviously have to bypass them unless they were built post-colony ship. I honestly don't know.
Well, I'm curious. If they have a satellite, you know, that kind of weaponized satellite defense system, would it go both ways? Would it be directed outwards away from the planet to against oncoming threats? Or would it be directed towards the planet and, you know, prevent threats from escaping? You know what I mean?
It's not clear if it was. I don't remember. But I think it can work both ways.
Huh.
Like it might be a way to restrict access to the planet. That way you don't get ships or unauthorized personnel coming down to the planet, or it might just be a way to protect the planet from oncoming invasion.
Could be. I say let's keep watching or keep an eye out for in these next couple episodes and see if it plays
an Yeah, part. I think it plays an important part in later episodes. I don't remember. I've seen this season once, and that was months ago. Earlier this year, it was probably about a month and a half before we started this podcast. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's some more explanation coming.
Well,
so
all right,
we'll get there.
Something to keep an eye out for later episodes.
Yeah, but this episode ends on a crazy note because it'll lead nicely into, not really nicely into two, but you can't not talk about it since someone suggests to him that he kind of relives the events of what happened, because we didn't touch on it, but as Kovacs woke up to a bloodbath, we skipped over the part where he was attacked and he was stabbed in by the right peck with a piece of mirror. Then someone suggested, because he blacked out and he couldn't remember who he saw. So I think it might have been Poe, or it might have been Poe.
No, but why would he black out though?
Well, he was fresh out of the tank. He was probably having sleeve sickness, and it's all fuzzy.
Yeah, but I mean, this is Takeshi Kovacs, the Boba Yaga that everybody's afraid of. I figured, you know, he could handle this shit enough, or well enough, to be able to remember it without having to.
You saw he was
stab himself in the chest again to figure it out.
Well, you saw one of the things he always requests is having a mirror once he gets re-sleeved. That way he can look at it and help his transition in his sleeve sickness. But because everyone was dead, there was no mirror easily accessible. He had to walk out into the hall. He found the mirror, and that's when he was looking at himself to kind of set the re-sleeving process into place. And then that's when he was attacked. Because the attacker put his head into the glass, and then they fought a little bit, and then ended up stabbing him by the peck. So, and then at the end of the episode, he takes a knife, stabs into his wound to kind of jog his memory, and realizes that it's the person he's been looking for. It's Falconer. Mm-hmm. That bitch killed everyone and tried to kill him.
Which makes sense. I mean, if Takeshi Kovacs can do it, then she definitely can.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it was kind of something that you saw coming. Like, I hate to say it, I kind of saw it coming. Just because you knew the premise of the whole thing was he's been looking for, and then this guy pulls him out, says, "Hey, I know information, or I can help you with this, but, you know, I won't do it unless you protect me." And then he just, you know, it was kind of predictable, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. And I don't think it surprised me at all when I first watched it. So nothing to like, oh my gosh. Now, the way he had to go about jogging his memory, that scene was pretty intense. And where he was, you know, stabbing himself and screaming and looking into a mirror trying to recall everything. I was like, okay, dang.
I mean, and then that's kind of another thing. After so many hundreds of years, and after constantly being tortured and attacked and shot and stabbed, he would, you know, be used to the pain. But
yeah,
I mean, I didn't. Maybe it was emotionally traumatic. That's why he was screaming so much. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. He's still human. I mean, his sleeves have nerve endings, so I guess. I mean, you might be used to the pain. Doesn't mean it's gonna not hurt.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm sure getting shot the first time hurts just as bad as getting shot the 12th time. Not that I would ever want to be shot at all, or even that many times, but
yeah, I mean, that's true. But I mean, this guy's he's gone through, you know, VR torture, which is supposedly just as real as. And I mean, he's gone for forever. You would think that people would eventually become numb to the pain, you know, with constant.
I mean, it's a part of the job. So yeah, maybe he's used to it, but still, it's, you know, you get a shot, and it's you're still gonna flinch a little bit every time the needle goes in, no matter how many shots you have had to have.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know. It's just. It's one of those, yeah, he's probably used to it, but it's still going to hurt.
Yeah, but he's supposed to be the big, bag tough guy. He's got to muscle through it or power through it.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's kind of crying like a little. And he doesn't do it for any other times when he's constantly getting beat or attacked.
Well, it was probably, like you said, physically painful and then emotionally painful because he's realizing that who he saw for the first time after spending the last 30 to 35 years looking for the bitch, so.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'm just nitpicking.
Maybe. Definitely.
If he's going to get the title Bubba Yaga, he's got to earn it.
You gave him that title.
All right, well, he's got to earn it from me, and he's not earning it. So...
Maybe that'll be the title of the episode. I mean, if he's going to be
John S. or John, yeah.
The last Bubba Yaga.
Yeah, the last.
The last envoy.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, but now let's switch over to episode 3 a little bit, or episode 2 a little bit, sorry. Episode 2 was chock full of information. Like, starts with that crazy scene where the Protectorate Special Forces go up to the scene of the crime. And then they try to take it over, and local PD was like, no, we're not having it. This is our scene. And then they just freaking go ham on the whole homicide crew and crime scene crew. It's like, was that necessary? And then you hear him in the next scene explain it to the governor, where he's just like, I took care of it. There's no witnesses. We're good. It's like, but if you're all that powerful, couldn't you just, you know, wave your hand a little bit and make them do what you want?
No, because they don't like them. And they make it pretty clear that they don't like them or respect the military. I mean, the detective even said so.
Yeah, there's some sort of some indifference between, you can tell the governor doesn't like the colonel being there. The police don't. It doesn't seem like really anyone cares for the Protectorate's presence on Harlem's World.
Well, I think the governor doesn't like him there because, one, he's kind of an asshole. Two, you
kind
know.
Kind of, yeah, he's a big asshole.
You know, she talked earlier about how she's her, God, I can't believe she even said this, and like, as a politician that just got nominated, yes, I am my father's, yes, I am the daughter of my father, or some shit like that. Like, it was like, wait, what? You're the governor and you just said that? And, but I think that she does not want to be seen less than her father, because I'm assuming her father was former governor. I think he moved.
He's
up.
The founder.
Oh, yeah, he's the founder.
The planet's named after him. Harlem's World.
Yeah.
And
so, I mean,
named after him. Shit.
Well, he's
name?
Still alive, isn't he?
Yeah, Conrad Harlan. They said he kind of resigned his governorship, and I don't think there was an election, so I don't think anyone elected her to. It was more
no,
of just.
I think
just
there
a,
was.
No, I don't think so. I think it was more of a succession.
It could be.
Kind of like a monarchy instead of a democracy or republic, whatever forms of government and vote.
Democracies and republics.
Yeah, but, you know, he renounced his governorship. He kind of took some oath to, and now he's off hiding somewhere. But, you know,
well,
she doesn't want to be compared to her father.
No, well, I figured he moved up in the chain, you know. I mean, if he's a governor, I'm assuming he was like the governor of the planet, but the Protectorate's I'm assuming was huge. So he just kind of, moved up the ladder to bigger and better things and then left it to his daughter.
No, he renounced his position. And, you know, it's one of those things. I don't remember which episode it was, but there's a scene in one of these where Mess are talking with the governor, and she says something like, I know you were like my dad's best friend, and you know, no one's seen him in God knows how long.
So, you know, that's one of the things that kind of confused me. What the heck are meths?
Meths are just the people. They're the filthy rich. They're the probably 1% of the one percenters.
Oh, you know, so, okay. So they're like the lords.
Yeah. It's not really,
It's a feudal
system. It's
not system.
It's not an official name. It's just something the lesser people call the super rich, who live, you know, they're like gods who don't seem to die and have so much money they can clone themselves and have backup so that they can live and live and live. It's just the stinking filthy rich.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. And I think it would make sense that, you know, I don't know if they were just random Mets that were her friends. I think that they might have been a part of a council, which would make sense because it's actually very similar to the English political system, which has the House of Commons, which is supposed to be of, you know, the people, and you have the House of Lords, who are the lords of the land, which is the same as which has been passed down for hundreds of years, even back to medieval England. You know, well, these are the same rich elites who live in family name forever in our time. But in this, they actually do live forever because they can, like you said, continue the cloning process. They can back up their sleeves. They can pay for and afford it to live forever. So I kind of, you know,
that's one way to look at it. I looked at it as, you know, they're the filthy rich, but they're also like her cabinet or her consultants or, you know, someone. And I think even in the at the end of this, the second episode, two of them die. And she mentions that three people in her crime organization or whatever got killed and is kind of questioning on how it's not a coincidence. You know, and then the rest of the mess. Well, I think we can talk about that in a minute because that's, I think it's late in the episode.
Yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about. When do they go to the club? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, it's after the club. Because I think it's actually in episode 3 because it's after, yeah, it is. Because 2 ends with the colonel punching out Kovacs. So it's in episode 3 when Kovacs has been arrested by the Protectorate and is brought to the governor and they're having that conversation.
Oh, okay. But what about that club scene though? So then club scene was definitely episode 2. Apparently he took some of the drugs, the eye drugs, and you know, he got into the club, Poe hacked him in. Or no. It was the boss that we can't figure out the name of.
He gave him some information. Hey, they're probably going to be here. And he was like, well, that sounds like somewhere I need to be on the list. And he got him on the list and got him in. It was a really weird place. It was called Lost Souls or Soul Market is what it was called. And it was kind of a place where, like, when people passed or their sleeves passed, it's kind of where they stored. And you get this crazy scene, too, where you see just mounds and mounds of stacks and just kind of people combing through them. And it's one of those situations where there's so many stacks that there's not enough sleeves to put everyone into.
Yeah.
And so it was weird. It was cool visually because you obviously know that's mostly CG where you're looking and it seems like, you know, 100 yards, couple hundred yards of just probably 10 meter high stacks, piles of stacks. I mean, so that was weird. It's the episode 2 was the only episode I had to watch twice because there was so much information and I felt.
Yeah, I think I might need to rewatch it again, but you know, it would actually make sense. Cause then they talk about how if you die, you get a free sleeve or, you know, you're entitled to a new sleeve if you wanted another sleeve, but you're granted whatever you get.
Yeah, that was kind of what was happening on Earth. But now that they're on Harlem's world, a different planet, it's, you know, the rules might be a little different or there's just not enough sleeves to go around.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. Because, I mean, that would make sense if there was a governmental backlog, like if they had the same thing to where they promised it. Maybe it's just the sleeves of the people they've killed. I don't know. I doubt it because it's kind of it's a rich people club, meth's club, but it was kind of an underground club. So you never know.
It was an underground meth club. And we say meth as in the rich people club.
Yes. In the context of the show, not.
Yeah. Cause I know I brought up meth lab earlier and so that I can make shit get confusing real quick.
Yeah. That's for damn sure.
So, but this episode, like I said, chock full of information because you get a little more detail. We'll start with Kovacs, his sleeve. You find out his sleeve's military grade. And I know you're going to get that in the first episode too, but you find a lot more about it. So he has like enhanced reflexes and
can go full Jedi on his guns.
Yeah, that's weird. So, but he can only do them with those two guns. So the guns are like tied to him, maybe RFID chip or something, so that if he's within a certain range, yeah, he could. It looks like he's using the Force, and that was something I was going to bring up. It's like, you know, a Jedi reaching for his lightsaber, you know, Luke reaching for his lightsaber, and when he's in, damn, any other time I would know the name of this creature, but now that I'm sitting down on the spot recording, yeah, on Hoth.
Oh, I don't remember the name of it.
You know, and as soon as I stop recording, it'll hit me, but of course. But, yeah. You know, like when he's reaching for it for his lightsaber, it's the same situation with his two handguns. That's cool.
That is cool.
So you have stuff like that, and then there, you know, an increased metabolism. So he's sitting here trying to get drunk to forget shit. He can't drink fast enough to get the feeling. Increased heal. It sounds like if you were to
hey Captain America know what it feels like now to not be able. God, to drink.
I was gonna say it's like if you take Captain America and mix it with a little bit of Jedi powers. That's what you got right there in this altered carbon funny. Boba Yaga. I hope we're saying that right.
I hope so. Oh, that was funny. Because he is.
But that's exactly where I was going with it.
That's funny.
The only thing is, and it's something, and we find all this out because he asked Poe to do a detailed scan of the sleeve, and we also find out that there's a bio tracker, which is how the Protectorate was able to find Kovacs in the club in the first place, because they used that tracker. Because you also find out that this sleeve, it's stolen from it's one of their sleeves. It's something they use when they cast on planet or off planet, wherever. So it's a military Protectorate sleeve that is legally in his possession.
Right. Which I'm confused why he, you know, the rich guy who did it in the begin with, you know, he said he was one of the original, or at least I think he said that he was one of the original people to.
Yeah, he was on the transport ship. Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of the oldest people to live, and he just got RD'd immediately after that happened. But why would he steal it from the Protectorate?
How did
he steal it? That's another thing.
That's why I think it's something to do with back when, and I say back when we were talking, how the governor says three of her crime co-conspirators were killed. I think the governor is running some sort of illegal crime organization too. I don't remember, so I don't, you know, it's not me hinting. This is a legitimate semi-educated guess. That could be what's going on, and it's not really revealed in these first three episodes, and I'm pretty sure it is later in the season.
All right, well, I guess we'll keep an eye out for it. Things to keep an eye out for next episode.
Yeah, but another thing to bring up is, you know, we obviously thought Poe was dead at the end of season one. And to find out he wasn't at the start of season two was kind of awkward. And as of right now, we haven't really got an answer of how he was pieced back together. But we know there's some sort of issue with him. Because every so often, it's frequent enough to where it's becoming a problem for Takeshi Kovacs. But Poe will glitch out and he'll suffer short-term memory loss. And there are several times where Kovacs is like, you have to reboot. You have to shut down. And Poe's refusing it because he's like, that could put me out a couple hours, maybe a couple days for all we know. He doesn't know how long he would be out if he were to undergo a system reboot. And then Kovacs
would lose
like,
all of his memory.
Yeah. Kovacs is like, no, that's not it. It's whatever memories you're hanging on to with Lizzie from season one, obviously.
Right. Which, more hint. There's going to be some backstory to that soon. I'm guessing to what happened there.
Yeah. Well, they got to explain because, you know, they left Lizzie in a good place at the end of season one. We know, hey, she's back into a sleeve. It's a synth sleeve, but she's with, you know, her mom's out. The family's reunited. He helped her recover from the brokenness that she was to a functioning person of society. So I don't know why he would be hanging on to the... We got to find out more on why he's so adamant on remembering her.
Yeah. And maybe because, like, hint, hint. Well, I don't want to say hint, hint, but he died before she came out, or that he knew, because wasn't it like one of his dying things that right before he... Oh, I guess that's why I said hint, hint. Air quote is what I was trying to say. Air quote died.
Well, yeah, he did. His last dying thing before he was taken out by the Ghost Walker in season one was needle casting her consciousness into Sex Cloud City, where she wrecked shop. But then you could just get Takeshi to be like, hey, she's good. She's golden. She's in a great place now. And then you would think he would be okay with it. Maybe because it was his first, what do they call it? Psychotherapy treatments or whatever. Maybe that's why he has an attachment. I'm not 110% sure.
If you remember, towards the end of season one, he was starting to have regrets if he made the right decision because, you know, she became overly aggressive and too easy to kill.
She became bloodthirsty.
Yeah. So, I mean, they pull her out of the Lazarus pit or something?
I don't know. Might have, but it's one of those we'll find it out. We haven't yet in these first three episodes, but we'll figure out what the hell's going on, where and why he's having these issues on letting her go.
Yep.
But that's
just need to give a couple more episodes. They probably just needed time to fill.
I liked how he was using, well, not necessarily time to fill. There's, you can obviously setting up the season and trying to get all the information out there, but not dump it on us.
Well, I mean, there's only 8 episodes this season, right?
Yeah.
So if there's only 8 episodes, my question becomes, does what happen at the end of season one that's responsible for all this really, you know, does it matter to the storyline for the second season? I'm curious on what role that the end of season one is going to have or is supposed to have on this season.
And if we see, you know, some of it in episode 3.
Yeah. I mean, you start to, because at the end of episode 2, the Colonel finds Kovach because like you said, he has the implant in and that's how they were able to find him. So they tracked him down, knocked him out, and then they took him to the facility, and that's where we see him at episode 3, and they're going to try and extract the information from his head. I think they called it the circle. That's what they did for the punishment.
Well, yes. Yeah, the circle is not really a punishment, but it's an execution chamber. It's like the Roman Colosseum.
Yeah.
So they'd get what they would do. And we're jumping into 3, which is fine. 2 is pretty much wrapped. But let's talk about 3. I mean, the circle is like I said, the Roman Colosseum. And so what they do is they take whatever prisoner, whatever criminal, and they extract his memories. And this device was used by, I guess, the special forces, so it would extract the memories of everyone that this person hates and kind of put their faces over it of the enemy. That way there was no hesitation when they went and fought the enemy. Or maybe that was just in training, something like that. But they kind of got devious and started using it to where it pulls your loved ones from your memory. And then they go and I guess they have these fighters in scent sleeves. And they kind of...
Yeah,
they pull Lizzie at the end of season one and transform them into whoever they extract from the person's mind.
See, and that was one of the things that kind of confused me. Like, do they just... How does that work? Because they were in their own organic sleeves. Or not their own, but they were in organic sleeves. Which I guess there's a difference between organic and synth sleeves.
Oh, yeah.
We found out about that later in the episode. But how did they... like, how does that process work? They get into like a chamber and then they turn into in almost a Star Trek fashion of just spontaneously switching to a different character.
Well, they're not OG. They're not in organic sleeves. They're in synth sleeves, so they could be manipulated. Like we saw Lizzie when she casted up to Sex Cloud City, she was a Caucasian, I think, redhead, and then she transformed like a changeling into Lizzie. So it's a similar situation, but it seems like it's less advanced, so they need a machine to change the appearance, and then they also implant memories, which I guess they pull from Kovacs's mind and his experience with them to kind of simulate, you know, some of the persons. For example, one of the people is Ortega, so pull her face, make one of the synths look like her, and then pull some of his memories and kind of make like a little memory chip of Ortega.
Yeah, well, don't forget, they also, I don't know if you brought it up, but they also drugged him in the beginning with apparently a heavy amount of drugs from, according to the governor, which yeah. I thought was interesting, now that we kind of bring that up, that the governor and her friends, when they were watching the execution beforehand, they were in Vegas, essentially. I guess, yeah, pretty much in Vegas. Well, they were gambling yeah. on how many rounds he would last.
Yeah, and I think one of the references, I mean, it was like, it's when I was watching the scene, I really got the Gladiator vibes, you know, the Russell Crowe movie from 20 years ago, where, you know, it was super rich people just watching, and even some commoners, because they broadcasted it over their Oni eyepieces, and it was kind of just it was essentially a Roman Colosseum that takes place 400 years from now. Because I think she bet on him to last 3 rounds.
Wow.
And then, you know, this is where Charnel finds out who the hell he's dealing with pulling his memories, because the last one he pulls is Calquest Falconer, who, it was the leader of the resistance or whatever the fuck it was called.
It could have been. And, no, never mind. I was thinking of something else.
He pulls her image up, and that's when he realizes, he as the colonel realizes, that he's dealing with the last Boyega.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to the governor. He's like, "We got to stop this." And she's like, "No,
wanted to put a bullet straight in the stack and just end it."
Oh yeah, and just, you know, call it a day.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, no one survives the circle. This will be fine. And then she gives him money to bet, and he, of course, bets, knowing who it is. He bets on Kovacs coming out of the circle alive, which he did.
Yep, he won the bet, too. And he came.
Yeah, but you get some great information here that I didn't realize the first time I watched it, especially since I didn't really watch. You know, I'm watching this season 1 and 2 back to back for the first time. I didn't when I watched it season 2 initially. But when he's fighting, he is in Kovacs, is fighting in the circle. The first opponent is Ortega, as I mentioned before. And because he's drugged, he doesn't realize that it's not really Ortega.
Right.
Until she brings up him letting her family die. And I want to see if you catch this. Do you know what he said?
Oh yeah, but I
triggered
provided,
him to remember.
Yeah, I paid for new sleeves. I got them all resleeved. I got them all.
He got the Niños resleeved. He got the kids resleeved. He didn't. I don't think her mother and her uncle.
Or Tio. I think they RD'd. But she was caught off guard because she didn't know that they were resleeved. She just knew. Almost like bullet points of information, like, hey, bring this up while you're doing it just to fuck with him.
Yeah, just enough to make it real. Yeah, exactly. And I guess because no one, you know, they never had to deal with someone as prestige, well-trained, we'll go with well-trained as Kovacs, that they probably weren't able to pull all the information. We saw how much of a struggle it was just to get 4 faces out of them.
Yeah, that was funny as hell when the they
when
pulled
the tech
up the image.
Like,
they're like, yeah, well, sure, if we go anymore, we might wipe out his memory. Oh, what's he got now? And he's fucking a unicorn.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the colonel fucking a unicorn and then him flipping him off. It's like
that was great. Okay. I remember watching that and I was laughing my ass off then too. I'm like, yeah, that was
that was it was hilarious.
that was great.
Yeah. And then you know, he takes care of Ortega pretty swiftly after he realizes it's not Ortega, snaps her neck. Then they send out Elliot. And then Elliot and Ray are out there tag teaming him because they realize, you know, they're no match for the envoy.
Well, didn't they send Ray out first and he still thought that it was actually Ray and, you know, because, you know, he was still drugged out. But he obviously has a lot of deep emotional problems still from killing Ray and they didn't believe that he'd be able to do it again. Obviously, they were wrong, so that's why they sent out, what was his name? Elliot?
Oh, yeah, Vernon Elliot. No, Elliot was the second one that came out.
I thought he was last, and then because he...
No, it was Ortega, who he killed. He snapped her neck. Then it was Elliot, who he stabbed with the sword that the Ray synth brought out, because Ray came out before Elliot was killed. And then Falconer came out while he was fighting Ray, and that's when he was like, just go ahead and kill me, because he, you know, he felt bad for everything that happened at the end of season one with him killing her, and he was like, just end me, and that's when Falconer comes out, and Ray and Falconer start fighting.
Yeah,
and that's when the Colonel realizes, he was like, did you send out the last synth? And they're like, no. And then Ray gets a shot on Falconer with the sword and cutter, and then you see red blood. So there's another way to differentiate a synth between an organic. A synth's leaving an organic. Synths have blue blood, and then organics have their normal red blood. And they were like, "Ah, oh, fuck, that's an organic. We're all screwed."
Yeah. See, and that's what I wanted to. That's one of the things that got me curious. You know, the blue blood were. Did they transfer stacks into a sin sleeve, or did they just transform, like, they just shift? So did they, you know...
Now...
Because they died.
I'm not sure.
They yeah. killed all of the sins, but did the stack survive? That's what I'm curious about.
That's the thing. So, like, when Lizzie got needle casted into Sex Cloud City, it never really... There's no real clarification if these synthetic sleeves have stacks. It just kind of seems like because they're synthetic and they have a, you know, probably a processor type mind anyways, that there's not really a stack in them like there are the organics.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Kind of.
I mean, it's not clear, but that's kind of just the takeaway I'm getting from it.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, hopefully they'll go into more details about it later, but... I don't know. This seems
it's one of those weird ones. I think on an organic, they need the stack to transfer the consciousness into the brain of the organic sleeve, but you don't really need the stack to transfer it to a synthetic brain or whatever brain they use. I almost said whatever Data's brain is made out of in a Star Trek positronic or whatever. I don't know.
It's a positronic matrix.
Something like that. Some crap like that.
Mm-hmm. It is that crap.
We didn't even mention it. Before the fight takes place. Yeah, before the fight takes place, once the Colonel realizes who he's dealing with in Kovacs, this is when he drugs him, actually. They're having a conversation, and you find out that the Colonel is actually... the same guy who recruited Takeshi to join SeaTac at the start of season one.
Yeah,
when he was
a little
12-year-old or 14-year-old boy, whatever, however old he was.
Mm-hmm.
And
apparently,
like,
yeah, because apparently there's a special program for the military where I guess they're only supposed to live for so long, but they can keep them on ice because they're such important militarily that they can circumvent that.
Well, no, Kovacs was like, because Kovacs was saying that's, you know, he should have been sleeved so many times that it should have fried him, and it should have messed him up to where he kind of, because they describe in this series, if you're re-sleeved too many times, you'll go mad. And so Kovacs was thinking, okay, if you've been sleeved, you know, you've been around for like 350 years, you should have been sleeved so many times that it's messing with you.
So then how do these rich people stay alive?
Oh.
And why haven't they gone back?
Well, because I think for the military, it's the same stack being sleeved over and over again. But I think if you're downloading memories into new stacks or different stacks, different floppy disks, so to speak, it there's less of an issue with the fragmentation of being sleeved over and over again. And chances are, you know, these mess probably, they're able to get their sleeves for the most part to last, you know, a couple decades, you know, probably 70, 80, 90 years. Whereas a military man, he's probably has to be in a new sleeve once a year, a couple times a year, every other year, depending on how much they're seeing combat and how much they're sleeve dying. So it just, I mean, either way you find out, you know, Colonel's at the end of his military career because he can't really be sleeved many more times.
Right.
And that they put him on ice. So there's spans where he's on ice because they're saving him and he's only spun up for war. So after they took care of the envoys on Harlem's World, you know, he might have been on ice for 100 years before some other conflict broke out on another planet he had to go deal with.
I wonder how old he is then.
I would say take Takeshi Kovacs, I would say take him and probably add 25 to 30 years. So whenever we find out how old Kovacs is, we could add 20 years and say that, or 25 years and say that's Jaeger, or maybe 40 years. I don't know. He's older than Takeshi. That's all I know.
Now, I'm curious how they would classify it, you know, as being alive. You know, is it just you, how long you have existed for, or how long you've been conscious for? You know, like all of those stacks that we saw in the club earlier that just kind of sitting there, they're technically not dead because their memories are still alive, but they're not really active because they're not in a sleeve. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I don't think we get much clarity. They kind of refer to the years or the, you know, when they were born as their age, but how many years they were actually conscious and alive and in a sleeve, that's a horse of a different color.
Yeah. I don't know. So that's just the little shit that I look at.
Yeah. Not really sure. But at the end, like we said, with the fight between, jumping back to the circle fight, Ray and Kovacs are able to escape the prison with the assist from one of the controllers, which is funny. I guess she's sympathetic to Falconer's cause. So she ends up cutting the power to helping them escape. And then also with the help of Poe and this new Lady AI that he tried to recruit.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of, we pretty much completely skipped over the Poe storyline. But that's all right.
Yeah,
continues to go mad. He finds a bunch of archaeologist AIs that have nothing else to do and been abandoned, so they hate people, and he's got the hots for her, and I guess she's starting to get the hots for him, and she feels bad because he's losing his mind.
It's not really getting the hots, it's more of, you know, befriending.
Yeah, it looks like she's getting the hots for her.
Not really. But yeah, I mean, there's not much going on with him, and I think he's trying so hard to be helpful, even though his short-term memory loss is causing so many problems. I mean, he even went to the extent of writing sticky notes. Like, after his scan, he wrote biotracker on a sticky note. He wrote increased metabolism on another sticky note, and then had like 3 dozen sticky notes laying around with all these detailed on the sleeves. I was like,
oh, he had them everywhere.
it was like, what is this, 2005?
Fuck, I don't know how anybody is able to.
All he had to do was get
a
notepad and write it all down, or just jot it into some system that is not associated with, you know, his memory.
Yeah, I mean,
it was just weird.
I don't know.
It felt a little out of place. It's like sticking in 400 years
systems. Well, I mean, it's pretty basic because it supposedly it works because, you know, whenever you just see him, you got a just nice little reminder. Oh, that's what I was supposed to be doing. But the problem is when you start having so many of those, you just stop paying attention to them. So they kind of become useless because there's just so many to look at that it's like.
Well, yeah, that was part of my point. It's just, you know, you have so many sticky notes. Then if you lose your memory, you have to reread them. You have to remember if he even remembers what the sticky notes are meant for. Hopefully he has a sticky note to tell him what the sticky notes are for. But it's just one of those, it felt like it could have just been stored some other way. It felt a little out of place for this futuristic sci-fi show.
Kind of. I mean, he's still losing it. And I mean, he's just, yeah. He's losing it pretty quickly. He's, because he'll go mid-conversation and just completely forget everything. And I think he knows that what the sticky notes are for, because as soon as he was talking with the archaeologist chick who's helping him out and forgets his memory, he immediately goes to the sticky notes and is like, what were we just talking about, or what were we just doing?
What were we doing?
Something like that. And
but that still doesn't mean he knows what the sticky notes are.
I think if you lose your mind, there's sticky notes everywhere. It's probably because you're losing your mind.
Well, yeah. But like I said, he would need to for example, like I said, one of them just said biotracker. And if you pick that up and you're just looking at that one sticky note, you're not going to know what it is if you have short-term memory problems. Mm. He's just going to be like, okay, something biotracker. And then is that going to be enough to jog his memory that, you know, that was from his diagnostic from Kovacs's new sleeve?
I don't know.
Is it something else being biotracked? I mean, so
how did he know about the biotracker?
He did a scan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, I forgot about that.
Yeah. No, but this, so to wrap up, we'll start wrapping up and just talking a little bit more about our thoughts. But see, episode 3 ends where Falconer ends up taking him back to the hotel, so Poe can look at him and let Kovacs heal. And there was another scene, but I apparently didn't jot it down. I don't remember what it was.
I do not either. But
I remember. It was between the governor and the colonel, and they're talking about, I don't know, they were talking about something. I just remember the one line where he was like, "I won the bet, so the next time I see you, you better pay me my money." That was the only scene. And now that I'm thinking about it.
Oh, yeah, but as he was walking away, they were talking about activating some weapon because she was like, just do whatever you need to do at whatever cost, whatever the price.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, because he turns to someone and is like, yeah, activate this. He's like, you got permission for it? He's like, just fucking do it, okay? So, yeah. So I got a couple questions for you, given now that we've seen the first three and talked about the first three episodes. How do you like Anthony Mackie's version of Takeshi Kovacs compared to Joel Kinnaman's version that we saw in season 1?
I mean, it's pretty good, and you could tell that he's did his homework, and that he watched the first season and studied and worked with them. I can't remember the name of the actor. Who was the name of the actor for the first season?
Joel Kinnaman. Just said it. Joel. All right,
we'll go with Kittleman then. I'll just call him Kittleman. So.
You can remember, you can say Kinnaman, but you can't say Joel.
No, it's awkward saying Joel Kittleman. I'll just say Kittleman. And then what's his
name?
Anthony Mackie. Mackie. All right, so you got Kittleman and Mackie. So Mr. Mackie, he obviously did his homework and paid attention to the first season, and he kind of has that vibe of, I really just don't give a shit. I'm just here as a means to an end, you know. Yeah. That real kind of laid back, I'm a fucking badass kind of personality, and you could see that. I think he does a pretty good job at it, and I think he's been a pretty good follow-up actor for this role, because the Asian lady that played him in the very beginning, and like, okay, it seemed a bit more of a stretch, but Mackie is actually doing a pretty good job.
Any differences between or anything? You know, I think choreography is pretty good. Fight choreography. I mean, not that there's dance choreography in this.
That would be awkward.
CG, any thoughts on that? What do you think of the CG and the fight choreography between one and two so far?
The CGI has been pretty good. Actually, it's been really great because I noticed that they even had whole like mountainside facilities that they had CGI'd, and that shit looked real. Like,
yeah,
I mean, so the CGI was good. The choreography was great. And I think that Mackie does a great job with these fight scenes. He does just as good as Kittleman, if not better, with the fight scenes. And I think that his experience with the MCU might have played a hand. He's also been in a couple other action movies. So, you know, he's got experience doing it. And they actually did some slow motions that looked pretty damn great, especially with him and Falconer.
Kel. I just call her Falconer.
We're going to go with Falconer because he's Falcon, so she'll be Falconer. Falconer. Ha, there we go.
Falconer.
So we'll go with that. Okay. So Mackie, I forgot where I was getting with this. Yeah, he's been doing great with these fight scenes, and that slow motion fight scene with him and Falconer was pretty damn great because they had the slow motion badass fight scene, and then they shot away. Or with the camera scene to do from something else, maybe to see the colonel, I don't remember. And they come back and it's just piles of dead body. And no, it was the governor because she was watching and she was like, fuck, what did I just do? That was a great scene. Yeah, that scene.
Yeah, that was good.
It's like in that moment, she knew she fucked up.
Yeah, pretty much. There was a couple times though when the fight choreography were... You know, because in season one, there wasn't really much, maybe except the sword fight at the end of the season. But there wasn't many places where it just felt rehearsed. You know, season one, for the most part, the fights felt authentic, with the exception, I'll say, of that last sword fight scene. You can kind of tell that they were, you know, actors play fighting sword fights.
Yeah.
And then there was, I think, the scene... In the second episode of season two, when after Kovacs hunts down the largest bounties on planet, just so he could run into Trip, the bounty hunter who shot him at the start of episode one, the one who plays Misty in the Defenders and Luke Cage series.
Yeah, we kind of ignored her most of this episode too, because she played a bit of a role in these couple of episodes.
Yeah, we did, but that's... We'll come back to her. Big parts for a minor character. Yeah.
Is she a minor character? I don't know.
No, she plays a relatively decent sized character, but I mean, it's one of those, but back to my point I was making real quick before we tangent or before I forget it is, that scene where they're fighting, the two of them are fighting the bounty in that shop or whatever. That scene, it just felt a little rehearsed, and it didn't, I mean, it's still a great fight scene, but it just, you could tell it was a little rehearsed, you know, some of the moves the actor saw coming or knew they were coming. So it just felt, it felt like, compared to the rest of the fight scenes in these first 13 episodes of this whole series, it was noticeably not so great.
You're trying to say.
Well, it didn't feel authentic. It didn't feel like I was actually watching a fight. It felt like I was watching actors spar.
Yeah, so. I mean, I guess that makes sense. Maybe I didn't really notice that when watching it, but I mean, maybe I'll double check.
Well, that's one of the things
with what's his name? Kedman.
Kittleman.
That's what. Kittleman.
It's like Kinnen something.
Kinnaman. So like cinnamon, but kinnaman.
Yeah.
All right. So kinnaman, he's a big dude. So these guys, when they're fighting him, I think they did set up the choreography to where it's like he could just manhandle him easily. And they're fighting a guy 5-6 inches taller than him. It's easier for him to just manhandle these guys. Where Mackie, he's a smaller guy. He's what, 5'9"?
No, I think he, in real life, 5'10"? He's like 6 foot.
Is he? Okay, well, he's still significantly shorter, so, you know, they're going to have a little bit, you know, he doesn't have a clear size advantage in the fight to where they're not fighting big-ass dude, 100 pounds, 5 inches taller than him, and they actually have to do more of intricate fight scenes.
Well, they had some intricate, well, I mean, you got to think, Kinnaman's, the sleeve from season one, while yes, he's taller, and, you know, Kinnaman's a big dude. He's still, you got to get the sense of, you know, he's still an expert martial artist and hand-to-hand combatist.
Well, and I figured
I'm just saying, there was just times it felt like, it just didn't feel like an authentic fight. That's the only thing I'm trying to make out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it could be.
It felt like a Hollywood stage fight. That's, I mean, it's no big deal. It still doesn't take it. Didn't say, hey, it's a bad fight scene. It's just something I'm looking out of between season one and season two is, you know, how good are the fight scenes? And so far, one stuck out as being a little lackluster because it just felt rehearsed.
Could be.
That's all I had to say about that.
All right. Well, maybe I'll double check the episode and see for myself. Maybe you're right. Yeah. Maybe it was a bad fight scene. But, you know, when I watched it the first time, it wasn't noticeably bad. Yeah. So.
And I'm just saying, it's not necessarily that it's bad. It's just you watch it and you can tell it's rehearsed.
Okay.
So, I mean, yeah. So, but to bring up the point where we didn't talk about Trep, the bounty hunter lady. So, one, you find out she's a bounty hunter. Two, you find out, I guess she runs a bar or her partner runs a bar. And that she took the bounty hunter money that Kovacs got with the top 5 bounties and put it all on a bounty to find, which we, you know, to try to find her brother, because I guess her brother's missing. And so she has a bounty out to try to get information that leads to her brother's finding.
Now, originally, I thought it was like her husband. So I was a little surprised to find her making out with her partner, who was another woman in the back room of the couch.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, now that makes a little bit more sense that it's the brother.
I know we didn't talk about her much, so I just wanted to get that out there before we wrap up this episode.
Yes, that was probably a good call. So I got a question before we wrap it up. What are you looking forward to seeing, or what are you going to look forward? Not look forward. What are you going to look for in the next couple of episodes? You know, storyline wise, you know, what are some things are you going to look for?
I feel like I'm watching it for the, not really the first time, but kind of like the first time. I don't remember much about season two. So I kind of, I want to know what the hell is going on with Poe, how Kovacs or whoever, probably Ava Elliott from season one was able to kind of piece him back together. But what happened there with Poe? And why he's so adamant on not rebooting is one of the main things that I am curious to find out.
Okay. So maybe also what happened with the storyline with Lacey, right?
Lizzie.
I'm always so close, but I'm not quite there with the names. Give it an episode or two more. Eventually I'll get them down by the time we're done with the series.
Yeah, probably.
But Lizzie, maybe figure out what happened with that storyline. You know, it seems like Kovac has some unresolved issues when it comes to Lieutenant Ortega, and apparently he was closer.
He
with
dug her.
Than...
He liked, you know, he was into her. He liked her.
Yeah,
they banged.
So they banged, but I think there were some unresolved issues there, and I think that we're gonna see more about that because I have a feeling that what was his name, Trevor. No, the person who was supposedly originally supposed to be in that sleeve, the
Riker,
boyfriend. Riker, Again, so close and yet so far.
Trevor and Riker are not close.
They're both Er. Okay. Trevor that's Riker all it takes. Is close. Yeah, I mean, it's an Er. But yeah.
Relatively low standards for comparison, but okay.
Riker, you know, him coming back into his sleeve and then Ortega banging Kovac and then Ortega, you know, falling for Kovac because it seemed like she fell for him too. And I think they both fell for each other. And then with Riker coming back, I'm sure there was going to be some problems. So I think there's going to be more of a, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing more storyline out of that and see how they go. Yeah. Because I think that's going to be a bit more prominent then.
Don't quote me on this, but I don't remember seeing. You may see Ray one more time, but like Vernon Elliott, anyone else from season one, I don't recall popping up again after this circle fight.
Yeah, I don't imagine flashbacks. Maybe you'll just probably have them bring up some kind of unresolved issues in the past. Maybe when talking with
just Poe, which is brief conversation. Yeah, it could be.
I feel like the Poe storyline is going to be where we get it, you know.
Yeah, that's just the most because it ties season one. You're more attached to it. I know there's some other storylines that develop in the next couple episodes, and you find out more about the planet and Conrad Harlan, who was the previous governor and stuff like that. But
I actually want to really find out more history of the Protectorate and all of this stuff, because one of the things that I noticed was when the colonel was interrogating Kovac before injecting him with the crazy serum. I don't know what it's called. He talked about how he was part of the Neo-American Empire. I don't know if you picked that up, but I did.
I remember someone saying something about it somewhere, but to my extent, I don't remember.
Yeah, because that's when he said he was a student to military history. This was before he told them that he was the guy who recruited him.
Yeah, and like I said, I remember that. I remember someone saying that, and then
because it was supposed to be outlawed, like they're not supposed to know that.
Yeah,
because
well,
propaganda. I don't know, but that's just something that I noticed, and I thought that was interesting. I'm curious because Neo, I'm assuming Neo is probably going to be like a nationalist American empire, to where somebody took control, nationalized the American government and actually started an empire, or if they just see us as an empire today. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you just want a little more history that takes place before Stax were kind of around, or the early days of Stax, to, you know, how the world transitioned from currently where we are to where they are now in the show.
Right, and that's one of the things that I love about Star Trek. They go into so much detail about the transition in history. Hell, they even make a movie about it, or one of them.
Yeah, and
post World War III, First Contact.
And it would be cool if they did get into it. I don't think there is enough time to go into that history. I know you do find out more about the planet and some stuff about that this season, but Protectorate history and the current government setup, where they're protecting all these planets or governing all these planets, I don't remember the details for. So
yeah, maybe it's in the book.
Maybe I haven't got that far. I've read a little bit more, but not, I just haven't gotten the reading bug back yet to sit down and start reading again.
Yeah, I actually have, even though I just don't want to read my school books.
Yeah. So first three episodes, you like them? How are you liking the second season so far?
It's not bad so far. I think the first three episodes of season two are off to a better start than the first three episodes of season one. But then again, I was really confused. But then again, season one had bonus points because it had a huge amount of nudity, and I've like seen none in season two so far. So very disappointing. Yeah, that's also another thing that I'm looking forward to. I mean, are they done with the nudity? Like, did they just do it for one season and like, okay, we're not doing that again?
No, there's some in the coming episodes.
Oh, is it like Spartacus, where they had like a shit ton in season one to get everybody interested, and then they just stopped doing it?
Could have been.
Damn, I really hope they didn't go that route.
Well, you'll have to stay tuned to find out.
Yeah, I guess so.
Should we punch it? Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
Chili.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Hustler!
Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
All right, well, what do we have in store for next week's episode, brother?
Well, next time on Deep Space High, we will be taking a trip into episodes 4, 5, and 6 of season 2 of Altered Carbon. I don't know why I went that route the way I did, but I did. So it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. Hopefully, in next week's episode, we won't be so tired and we might have a little bit more energy in that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I got some more energy. I just.
I smoked, and I just smoked before this. I smoked the indica, so it's a bit of a downer. And then, you know, I'm tired. I've been at work all day, and so I mean, yeah. That's probably why I'm down. But all right, well, I guess I'll do it for this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Deep Space High. Be sure to join us next week as we continue our conversation about Altered Carbon.
And don't forget to keep the conversation going with hashtag Deep Space High. Check out our Facebook page at Deep Space High Sci-Fi TV Reviews and our Instagram at Deep Space High Podcast to stay up to date with our whatever announcements that we decide to put out on Facebook and or Instagram.
Or when it's hashtag Taco Tuesday or Taco and Trek. God damn it. Hashtag Tacos and Trek. Can't even remember our own damn hashtags.
I remember the hashtag. You're the one with the crappy. You're the one with the Poe memory.
Yeah, I know, right? Oh, that makes so much sense. You know what? I hate to say it. I should almost start selling. Oh, my God. Should almost start calling myself Poe, Sky Marshall Poe.
I will start calling you Poe.
I'm starting to lose it, too. All right. Well, be sure to let us know what you think. Leave us a review on Apple Podcast. If you say that I'm getting too stoned for the shows, you may be right. Even though I did smoke the baby bong today, I didn't do the full size, so it's only a little one. Be sure to leave us a review, because the feedback does help us. I am Sky Marshall Chris,
and I am Jedi Master Steve of the High Council of Jedi Masters.
Please, sir, remind me what we were talking about.
Okay, Poe.